Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I'm Greg Hahn, President, Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management. And with me in the studio is Amy Anderson. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Production Coordinator, and Adam Koons. Adam, how are you this morning?
I am well.
Excellent. This is the last podcast of the year. So we will take a break next week after the holidays, and we'll probably take a break the first week coming back. So we probably won't do this till mid-January, but thank you all for listening this year. We're going to cover, the plan here is to cover a couple of our investment themes as we head into the end of the year. But we had some big news this last week from the Federal Reserve, which is really, in one regard, not surprising. So the Fed announced that after their December meeting, that they're really accelerating the withdrawal of their stimulus, which has been this aggressive monetary stimulus used to support the capital markets during the pandemic, which included the bond purchase program and dropping interest rates to near zero. So the first step is to withdraw its stimulus, and they indicated that by March of next year, the monthly purchase program will be eliminated.
Yep.
And then with that, the expectation is that they'll have 3 rate hikes next year. Now, the pattern has been 25 basis points.
Yeah, it's kind of a consensus.
So if we have 75 basis points of short-term interest rate increases, that would put the Fed funds rate close to 1%.
Yep.
So the way that we're looking at this is that the surprise in all of this has been the surprise to me, maybe not to you listeners, but the decline in the rate on the 10-year Treasury, which is below 140 now, isn't it?
137 this morning.
So we may see, I mean, we may approach an inverted yield curve here with short-term interest rates actually higher than long-term interest rates. And that just really depends on the outlook for economic growth. And
yeah.
So anything that you would add to that, Adam?
No, the one thing was that the euro-dollar curve actually did invert twos to tens, which is U.S. debt that's denominated in euros. Inverted twos to tens last week. So
yeah, and with inflation running above 5%, the real yield now on Treasuries is so. This we think this to be a moment in time, but we're going to be here for a while.
Yeah,
this is not a one quarter event. We've been at it all year, and so it's going to be interesting. Next year is going to be very, very different. So let me kick off some of the themes, and let me start with this one theme. We talk about the invisible hand of Adam Smith. Adam Smith, back in 1759, wrote the book where he first introduced the concept of the invisible hand, and it was called The Theory of Moral Sentiments, 1759. It's a long time ago. But the concept back then was almost divine intervention. It was an act of God type of description, and it's really this concept of the invisible hand has really morphed into a metaphor that applies now to individual actions that have unplanned or unintended consequences. And we kind of make light of it. It's the invisible hand has really become visible because the government intervention has really taken the unintended, there are unintended consequences, but the visible hand of the government in the capital markets for a free market economy is absolutely unprecedented. So with that government support has really helped to support the economy during the pandemic. So it's been an important piece of our recovery to the tune of almost $5.2 trillion.
Yep.
So the question is now what happens? So over
to I mean, I guess if you're, we've been relying on monetary and fiscal policy so much over the last 2 years, and now we're seeing that the Fed's pulling back. And then over the weekend, we saw news that there's pushback now on Biden's $2 trillion infrastructure bill. The question is, if all of a sudden we see a combination of both monetary and fiscal policy pull back on the sphere of inflation, what does that do for economic growth?
Well, and so economic growth, I mean, we're kind of looking at that 3.8% year over year, but quarter to quarter, I would expect it to be bumpy based on any COVID variant
right.
that is shooting around the country or the globe. But one of the key drivers is going to be inflation.
Absolutely.
So this inflation has really spiked for a number of different reasons, including supply chain disruptions, increase in raw materials, increase in labor costs. And so we don't expect to see inflation subside near term. Interestingly, the outlook the IMF has for Europe thinks inflation is going to come dropping down quickly.
Right.
We're not really seeing that here in the United States.
Not at all. And I guess it's a little interesting because I think a lot of people, when they hear the word inflation, the first thing they think of is the dollar is going down in value. And that has not been the case in this situation, where the dollar relative to the other currencies is actually held up. So this is a little bit different than our 70s style inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that means going forward, but and if that means anything different. But you're right, is that Japan actually hasn't seen any inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Europe, they're saying it's going to drop, but here I don't see the case where inflation drops significantly.
Mm-hmm. What else do you have for a theme?
So for me, I think valuation has been one of those things over the last couple of years. It's in some ways been disregarded. I mean, we've seen the S&P continue to go up, and people will point to interest rates as the reason why valuations are sustainable at these levels. But ultimately, I think we've seen for the first time in this fourth quarter where valuations started to matter, and the penalty for missing growth estimates at all,
mm-hmm.
was pretty rough on certain companies. I mean, we saw a couple of the mid-cap tech companies, like Okta, you know, drop pretty significantly because they missed those forecasts. So I think, you know, a lot of people priced in quite a bit of growth, and if the penalty for missing that is going to be high. But ultimately, and conversely, I think companies like Microsoft, where the valuation can be upheld with continued cash flows and sustainability through even all of the different COVID variants, I think you're going to see an even more bifurcated market where valuation matters more.
So PE on the S&P is what, 30 times?
Yeah.
So we're 30 times next year earnings, and that's 160 a share?
Yep.
So it's still close to the second highest level valuations, yep, that we've seen in history. One of the other more interesting issues in the markets, and I'm really, we've been pretty silent on this whole digital currency Bitcoin thing. But we have to recognize that as a theme for investors, it's going to be more prevalent next year. And part of that is we're waiting for the SEC to put regulations around what it can and can't do. So the banking system has been quick to look at trading platforms for Bitcoin, but you still can't invest in it through their trust departments,
right,
or you put it into portfolios. So it's like, all right, I'll let you trade it, but you can't invest in it.
Right.
So that, but what's happening is there's a trend in the developed banking world to have private digital currencies. So you can, you could be invited in to that digital currency, which can be used for investment banking and trade settlement and so on. So it's not necessarily Bitcoin, but it's a JP Morgan is experimenting with its private digital currency. So we'll see more of, we expect to see more of that. And we expect to see the SEC finally come out with some kind of regulation around digital assets. So in October, just this, 2 months ago, they approved the Bitcoin Strategy Fund, the ETF,
yeah,
that ProShares has. So that's one step towards putting some reg around it. So it's going to be interesting to see, and that will be a more prevalent, I think. I don't know if it shows up as an asset class necessarily. I don't. We would have to wait and see to see how it's being used. But at this point, I think we still believe it's used for illicit transactions in ransomware.
Yeah.
And if you can't really trace it, it's a dangerous, it's a speculative, it's used for speculation.
Absolutely speculative, yeah.
All right, so that's it on digital assets, yeah, for now.
Not a currency.
More to come.
More, yeah. Another theme I would say is really employment. And obviously a lot of jobs were lost, and we've brought back quite a bit of them. But the problem right now for me that I keep seeing is the actual labor force participation rate continues to be low 60s. Last I saw was 62.5. So you see plenty of job postings. We laugh about the fact that there's more supposed job openings than people that are looking for work. So that in and of itself has led to a lot of issues where you've seen American Airlines had to cut back on flights because they say they don't have enough employees. Southwest has stated the same thing. We've all been in restaurants where they can't even fill all the tables because they don't have enough servers. So it's a problem across multiple different industries. And ultimately, it will be a headwind to the economy because really people need to be working and making money to spend it, right? So I think to me that's a big thing to look out for this next year.
Yeah. So the other another theme is this issue around volatility, and the way that I'm looking at it, Adam, is linking it really towards the stimulus program. So the stimulus, both monetary and fiscal stimulus, has been an anesthetic over the market. You look over the last 10 years. We really haven't had, with just few exceptions, spikes in volatility. And those spikes in volatility, we just recently went through one during Thanksgiving. Arguably, we're going through one right now.
Right.
But with the Fed withdrawing its stimulus on the monetary side, and now it looks like the Build Back Better program is dead.
Yep.
So the next wave of fiscal stimulus may not happen. And the arguments there are: it was inflationary. We don't need it. It's expensive. We've already spent $5.2 trillion. Another $2 trillion on top of that.
Yes,
it won't have that impact. So if we remove that stimulus, the market has to fly on its own.
Yeah.
And that is going to likely lead to more swings in the market because we don't have the Fed rushing in. If we do see another spike in the virus, we don't expect the Fed to rush in with additional stimulus. And so it's going to be interesting to see if that actually happens. But we expect more volatility as a result of that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Which obviously you've seen. I mean, what, Dow's down 500 points this morning. And the last couple of weeks have just been extremely volatile. The NASDAQ declined by 3% in an hour on Thursday of last week. So, I agree that as investors kind of lose that parachute, they're going to be more apt to rush out of markets when things seem a little hairy. And then I guess let's talk about lower expected returns and what that's going to do to risk appetites. Obviously, with valuation stretched, it's going to push investors to take a little bit more risk. And we saw that all last year, right? And I don't know how in the bond world, I consistently heard that there were a lot of investment grade managers that now started to look at high yield. And high yield managers started to go into more esoteric asset classes. They probably didn't even know what they're doing. And in the equity world, people are doing the same thing, right? You're stretching to try to find that return any way you can.
Yes. And confession for all of those listening, this is our confession. We've been saying low expected returns now for several years, but the Fed keeps pushing more money into the system. So we don't expect to see the Fed pushing more money into the system. And as a result, we do expect that returns will normalize to historic levels.
Yeah.
But we're running over the last 3 years, 22.5% average annual returns on the S&P 500. That is especially through
a recession,
pandemic is just amazing. So we have the second highest valuations in history. It's going to be an interesting year from a valuation standpoint. So, but with that is China. Yep. So if we look at China, we've talked about China all year. It was a theme for last year. China's economy is going to grow. I think they're going to moderate growth to something closer to 6%. But their form of government and their form of capitalism, authoritarian capitalism, they made it clear they want to be a superpower so they can put all the resources that they want behind that and focus that. They've got that massive manufacturing infrastructure to support their trade. Even though the U.S. is trade balance is lower with China, that they potentially can fill the gap with trading with other countries and use their currency for that trade. So watching China build out its infrastructure, I think, is going to be one of the themes for next year.
And just before I walked in here, I saw a headline that Bank of China lowered their mm-hmm. rates this morning. So they are trying to support their economy still, even with lowering borrowing costs. So, yeah, I think China is one of those where they've had a difficult year. But part of that was just the party trying to, you know, mm-hmm. really put their foot in the ground and keep some of these companies from moving away from that communist regime. But I agree. Overall, great companies. They're going to continue to sell internationally. My fear is away from China and the emerging markets is, you know, your Indias, your Russias of the world. Where do they stand? And right now, it just doesn't look very good for them.
No, but I would not expect. I would expect this China Russia alliance to be to grow to something that's pretty meaningful.
Yeah.
As it relates to as it stands along or against Western capitalism. I think China's going to be the more dominant. Its economy is bigger,
right,
and more diverse. And so I think the intentionality that they have about aggressively building out their military is going to be really interesting. And the flashpoint will be Taiwan.
No, I was just about to say, I think that's really the breaking point this next year is what they do with Taiwan.
Yeah, they've got ambitions to annex this independent country, which historically has been supported by the United States.
Yep.
So it's gonna press a lot of buttons.
Yep.
And I don't know that the U.S. is necessarily ready for a dual front with Russia at the doorstep of the Ukraine,
right,
and China at the doorstep of Taiwan. And really, what will the United States
right.
do? It's gonna be an interesting year, Adam.
Very.
On that note, why don't we wind it down? We will be around this week, so we'll talk with you through the week. Have a great holiday if we don't talk with you. Thank you.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2021, Winthrop Capital Management.